questions, like, okay, what drives blood pressure up and down? And works through the physiology and what was the biochemistry behind the physiology, what's the nutrition behind the physiology. And you may not go into that in this class, but you learn the technique of asking that question.
Would you mind giving us a case example in which you worked through some of these physiological problems?
Sure.
What was the question?
Would I give a case example? And tell me if I'm taking up too much time. So when I started my practice, I sat down with the DSM that listed anxiety and depression, the symptoms of anxiety and depression.
The DSM is
the Diagnostic Statistical Manual for Mental Health. So it's basically the checklist. You know, are you depressed? Are you anxious? Do you have bipolar? And where's my notebook? And so, you know, this was the lecture that I just did. And so I looked at depression, and one of the definitions of depression is early morning waking. Why is that depression? And that's really the hallmark on why psychiatrists will prescribe an SSRI is early serotonin reuptake inhibitor, so Prozac. Early morning waking. If you have early morning waking, you will, and you know, feelings of hopelessness, feelings of fatigue, lack of concentration, Prozac. So I thought to myself, well, what's another cause for early morning waking? What's the physiological cause for early morning waking? Any ideas?
Circadian
rhythm. And so, what? Have any ideas what governs circadian rhythm? What? Hormones?
Cortisol.
Excellent. What else? Early morning waking. What? Melatonin might be one. Yeah. What else?
Light
might be one. Yeah. What's the longest period of time you go throughout the day without eating? Sleeping. What about hypoglycemia? What if your blood in your brain gets low enough for your brain to panic? And what if you're getting closer to insulin resistance and so the normal mechanisms don't get turned on? So an adrenaline response of some fight or flight response gets turned on. Because what happens is you're awake for 2 hours. Anybody done this? 3 a.m. The committee's like, oh my God, we have to study for physiology and all the yama and blah, blah, blah. And you listen to them for 2 hours, and then it goes away. It takes about 2 hours when you run out of glucose to pull up the fuel. So for an experiment, I just had my patients, I was like, eat protein before you go to bed. Slow burning fuel. And if you want to tip it towards the melatonin end of things, have turkey. Guess what? For 80% of my patients, early morning waking goes away. And if they still wake up, I have them get up and drink a little bit of fruit juice just to get immediate glucose in so that whatever adrenaline response is getting turned on, and you know, we can talk about if it's in the adrenals or if it's up in the brain. And that hasn't been sorted out in the research. I can't verify that in the research. But I understand I understand what adrenaline looks like. Epinephrine, norepinephrine. And so how do we control that? So a little bit of glucose, a little bit of fruit juice, a little bit of protein, nut butter, and people go right to sleep instead of 2 hours. And so I systematically went through the DSM and all the symptoms and say, what could physiologically cause this symptom? It's not because somebody's brain's mixed up. It's because their brain is malfunctioning for a physiological reason. Does that make sense?
So the question is, if these patients now oversleep, because they don't get up early,
yeah,
do they get depressed because they're afraid of losing their job because they're late?
They don't oversleep. They don't oversleep. Like, they wake up refreshed when the time, and actually many of them start waking up on their own. They don't need the alarm. Because 8 hours is 8 hours. It's enough. redo my lecture, but they're teasing out emotional causes from physical causes. What I do in my practice is I treat the physical causes and I let mental health professionals sort out the emotional causes. And there are real emotional causes. Bad marriages, bad childhoods, Microsoft.
First year ND,
second year ND, fifth year ND. But what you're doing is a lot. It's a big physical event that you're going through. Don't miss the physical aspect of what you're going through.
When you said that you were on that panel, that the other doctors were nervous, what were they nervous about?
Well, the psychiatrist can't, what a lot of MDs do, and not all of them, but depression, Prozac. And it's a list. If Prozac doesn't work, you go to Effexor. And if Effexor doesn't go, you go to Lamictal. And they don't work out the physiology. And so when they ask me, well, what are you doing? I start dragging them through the physiology, and they're like, they won't look me in the eye anymore because they can't dialogue with me. And the truth is, I mean, it was really fun for a while, and now I'm realizing that I get further with them and I have a better relationship with them if I don't make them look stupid. Because that's what happens, is that they take it as an insult. Because they can't, in all fairness, they don't have time. You have 15 minutes with a patient. If they come in and say, I'm depressed, write a script, have a nice day, and that's the tools they have. They don't have time for other tools.
And okay, one more.
Wait, have you published anything that, or do you have anything out there that you
what?
This is hot.
No, my talk wasn't taken.
Plug yourself.
You can, dynamicpaths.com. www.dynamicpaths.com.
This is your website where you post.
I have a blog. Publishing company is asking to publish, but we'll, pay off loans or sit and write.
Okay. Do you feel like the dual path has really benefited you? Because you think you do acupuncture as well?
I would recommend that you know how to touch the body. It doesn't have to be acupuncture. Massage, cream of sick. Touch your patients.
Don't get arrested.
You have to tell your friends that I came in.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Jazz Wolfers has been running for years and years, community grading nominee and stuff. and Frank brought some sation.
This was a community college group at the time, and seeing my arrangement, I was able to see, and so I came out and I did this monologue about my identity crisis. Well, I started out as a baby, and then I became Billy's boy, and Jerry's brother. And after I grew up, I was Tammy's dad. And I went through this whole thing about maybe why people, when they hear my name is Daryl, they say, oh, you won't get into that. Some day will. This little 10-year-old kid in the front row went nuts. Everybody else just really... Frank didn't help, because then I introduced him, he came out and said, geez, I never thought I'd get out. Let's go back to... Go back to this patient. So, you looked at this patient last night, yes? Yesterday afternoon, yes?
Yes.
So, for those people who looked at it, how did you think about it? What questions did you ask yourself? What's happening, okay? And how did you answer it? So, is that what you asked yourself first?
Everyone okay?
But you had this data. What was the first question that you asked yourself? Did you ask yourself what's happening?
No.
What's different? Okay, the first thing you asked yourself is what's different?
Yeah.
Yeah?
What's the same?
You asked yourself what's the same? Okay? You know what I would ask myself? What are these graphs? What are they measuring? And I look over here and I say, well, okay, time, and I have some graph that's measuring pressure, I have something that's measuring volume, and what are they measuring? Well, let's see, this one says it's aortic pressure, and this one says it's ventricular pressure, and this one says it's left ventricular volume. Then I can go and ask what's the same or what's different or what. But if I don't know what I'm looking at, then I don't know what is it the same as, or what is it different from. So, did anybody ask, what's going on? If I look at these curves, what can I see if I'm standing in that heart in various places? What do I expect to see? Anybody do that? No, okay. So, the eye, what was the same?
Not very much.
Not very much. Okay.
Except for the left ventricle and the aortic pressure was consistent, more or less with each other.
Okay. She says the left ventricular pressure and the aortic pressure was pretty much consistent.
In the first half.
In the first part. It was pretty close there. So is there a lot of resistance between the two places? Not a lot. Okay, then what?
I noticed that the valve from the left ventricle to the aorta opened and there was overpressure.
Okay, she said, oh, look at when the aortic valve opens, the aortic pressure is very low, much lower than she expected to be. She expected to be up here someplace, very low. Okay? And why might that our aortic pressure be low? Why do you think there might be a leak? Why do you think there might be a leak? There's not a lot of pressure. Candy said maybe there's a leak. Why would she think there's a leak? Because there's not a lot of blood in there. If I'm looking at this compartment and there's not a lot of blood, pressure's going to be low. Or if I look at that compartment and pressure depends on the volume, and the compliance. And, it's not, and one of the things I can say is, well, you know, there must not be a lot of volume. That's reasonable.
What
would cost that?
I don't know. What do you think? The Oris is one extra body. So why is there not blood there?
You might be in serious trouble. Right. So you're standing here, and what Katie said was the aorta sends blood out. Now, what I envision with this is one of several things, depending on age and things like that, or the person who's thinking about it. I see a post office, and I see stamps, and I see an address that says, rest of the Bible. Send it up. Now, more if I'm younger than that, then I see something else. I see a FedEx truck, and it's carrying this with an address. The real question is, the implication of that word sending it out to me is that if I stand here, a designated destination is down here. But if I think about what's causing the flow,
pressure gradient.
And so the pressure here is higher than the pressure there, will flow always go in that direction. Why not? Pardon? If the valve is functioning correctly, yeah, because the valve is functioning correctly, then the pressure pushing back this way is not going to cause any flow. But that pressure in there is pushing in all directions. So, what might there be a possibility of? I'm standing here and there's high pressure in here. One possibility is the resistance downstream is very low. There's a lot of flow going there. What's the other possibility? Maybe there's some flow going in this direction. And if that's, I don't know.
But in the graph, once that valve opens, the volume decreases.
Mm-hmm.
There's no
plateau. He says, in this figure, once this valve opens, the pressure in the ventricle decreases. Excuse me, the volume in the ventricle decreases, and the pressure in the aorta increases. All right? Okay.
However, the overall volume of the left ventricle is larger than
okay. So he's compared this volume and the volume excursion to what the normal was, and he said, boy, these numbers are really big. Why might those numbers be given? And let's go back again and say what Fatima said was, gee, the volume is decreasing when I expect it to decrease when this valve opens.
But at the bottom, it's still really high.
But at the bottom, in the bottom.
In the bottom of that.
Right here?
The volume drop, it's still really high.
Oh, the volume drop is still really high. Okay. Why do you think that might be? Let's assume for the moment that the muscle is working just fine. And if it starts out at a high volume, why might we think that it ends up at a high bar? She says there's either not enough going out or there's something coming in. How many people agree?
The difference is still very large,
right?
The change in the amount of volume is
equivalent to the change in the normal amount.
Okay, so the change, or the stroke volume, the change in volume here, she says, is equivalent, same order of magnitude, as the normal. What's a normal? About 70 or 80, and this is maybe 100. So that's putting out a lot. How come it's still high? How come it doesn't push all that out?
Could you just
have the heart enlarged?
Is the heart enlarged? Well, I guess if the volume is high all the time, I might think the heart is enlarged. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
That's what I'm thinking.
If I push something out, and then there's not a door to shut it and keep it out, and it's going to go back in.
Okay. Can we hold that thought? Because at the place where that's going to flow back in is over here. What I was getting at here is this is pushing out, and it stops pushing out. Why does it stop pushing out? Because it repolarized, it relaxed. How come it didn't keep pushing until all that volume was out? You just said it. Because it repolarized. Because how much it's pumping out, the volume in there has nothing to do with the timing of when it contracts and when it relaxes. That's all in the action potential. That's all in the electrical. So, if it starts out high and it ends up high, that's not surprising to me, because it started to relax right here, as it would normally do. Charles had an interesting observation. He said, wait a minute, if that valve here is leaking, and the ventricle relaxed, flow would go from the aorta back to the ventricle. Now we have to ask, okay, if I look at this timing, what we see now is that this volume went up very fast, very high. And one of the things we might ask is, what's going on in the atrium? But we don't know what's going on. How fast is this fall compared to normal? It's faster. So, is a hypothesis that the aortic valve is leaking a reasonable hypothesis?
Yeah.
Does the data sound like okay so far?
Yeah.
Let's take what Laura said a step at a time. Because she didn't look at this the way we did. She looked at this and said, where is there noise? And what did the noise tell me? And she said, oh, there's noise here. And there's noise here. So one of the questions you might ask yourself first is, why would I expect to see noise here? Normally I wouldn't expect to see noise there. So there must be something flowing there through some small opening with a reasonable amount of flow during that time to cause that noise. And that turns out really to direct us toward thinking about what's going on in the valves and ventricle. And so we could end up with hypotheses we may have based on first one. Or if we took our approach, if we did, and said, well, it looks to us like maybe the aortic valve is leaking in this backflow. If that's the case, then how do I know that this increase in volume is not because of the normal flow from the atrium? And if I have normal flow from the atrium, do I expect to hear a lot of noise? No. But I do hear noise here, so see, that's consistent. That's consistent with a leaky aortic valve. The other question then was, so wait a minute, I don't expect to hear any noise during the ejection phase, but I do. And so, why might there be noise there? Because there's so much volume going through. Okay? There's so much volume going through in a short period of time. More than usual. That's what you guys told me. You told me, oh no, this is 150, and normally it should be about 70 or 80. So would that extra volume going through at about the same time cause turbulence? The answer is probably yeah. How do I know that during systole, during this contraction period, how do I know that valve is not narrowed a lot? How do I know that it's not stenosed? How do I know that during the ejection phase, the valve is open and it's open pretty well?
Because the pressure of the ventricle is not excessively high, like it would be if it was pressing on a lot of blood.
Okay. Because she says the pressure in the ventricle at that point is not really excessively high. What this suggests to me, though, is that maybe there's a little more resistance than normal. Because normally I expect to see that aortic pressure just right, just complete below the ventricle. So if this suggests there's a little more resistance and I'm putting this huge volume through, do you think you are? Somebody raised that question in the car yesterday and said, well, if I look at the noise first, is that an okay way of doing this? And the answer, of course, is yes. You look at what makes sense to you to look at, you begin asking yourself the question.
Yeah. I think it was me that wrote that
question,
actually.
I'm trying to keep that in mind. Excessively enormous.
Okay.
What is a person? There was something on the news the other day about a 7 foot something teenager.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like a
okay. So now that's very different. That's very different than the enormous person who's obese.
Oh, I think more of a 7 footer.
So you think about that 7 footer. Now, okay. And you think about, we're not going to talk about erythropoiesis. We're not going to talk about the formation of blood. But certainly the formation, and we will find out next quarter about extracellular fluid volume. Extracellular fluid volume is a regulated variable. Okay?
Okay.
So let's talk about this big guy. And what is the system regulating? What is it monitoring?
It's all relative.
What?
It's all relative to him. So.
The, Why is it relevant to him? What is it the system measuring? It's measuring aortic, it's measuring arterial pressure.
This is the tall guy.
And it's measuring as some measurement of volume. We'll see next quarter. And so if in fact for this guy as he grows to maintain a normal pressure, he has to end up maintaining the normal volume.
Right.
And to maintain the normal volume, he's going to end up with a higher blood volume.
Okay.
So you're asking about it's all relative to this person. It's all.
So pressure should be in the same range.
That's right.
Volume.
Right.
What about obese? That's a different.
Different game.
Higher pressure.
Obesity is a different game, and what happens is that that tissue is not all that vascular. So there's a whole bunch of problems. And if you've got these fat little kids, according to today's paper, did you see today's paper?
No.
Well, the obesity epidemic is reported at the cardiac meetings the other day, and that you would expect the cardiovascular system at 20 years old to show signs of vascular disease that you normally expect at 45 years old.
Yeah,
different issue.
Based on what we've learned so far, does it construct what it would look like when somebody had an enlarged heart? Because I know, like, with steroids, people die of heart attacks because their heart gets bigger. So how does that play into, like, flow and how?
So I'll tell you what. Let's hold that question until we talk about blood pressure regulation, short-term blood pressure regulation, and cardiac output. And then we're going to talk about that particular situation. Okay? All right? Any other questions? Everybody notice we have a celebrity? And she has told me, and she made it as a kind of general announcement, everybody sitting around her, she will sign your copy. Their rate is faster, their stroke volume is higher, because right now we're just looking at the heart. In order to answer the questions that you want to ask, you should really look at the whole system. But we'll wait till we have his arteries and veins and capillaries. And then Tom can talk about exercise. I don't know anything about exercise because I don't play. Other questions? Why are we listening to the Judds today?
Who are the Judds?
We started with Dolly Parton. Because tonight is the Country Music Awards. CMA, so you don't know what the hell they're talking about. Because you wouldn't watch it if it was country music, unless you're living in Atlanta or Houston or any other place. Right? Very interesting thought. She said, there's flow, and the flow from above goes into the atrium, and the flow from below goes into the atrium. Maybe I can take advantage of the flow. Let the flow carry it in. What do you think I might be able to do to help them along?
Do something that's flexible.
What else?
Put a better shape.
Something that what? Flows. Wow. Okay. This is really neat. Let's deal with something that flows. Yeah. because we're doing something that's relatively small and it's soft enough that we're not really doing that. And the valve will just close around.
I have a question.
Yeah? What I have is a...
I think you're just feeding it.
Let's assume... Oh. Let's assume that this is a tube. Okay? Let's see, this is a tube. Okay? And so the tube has a lumen. Right? And I'm going to connect the tube on this side to something that measures pressure. Now, what I want to do is make sure that that tube doesn't have any air in it. Because what would happen if that tube has air in it? We're not going to push any air down, so there's not going to be air embolism. But what happens? What would happen if I have this tube and it has air in it? The air will get pushed to the detector, but how good will my measurement be? And what happened to the air? It got compressed a little. So that is not going to give me a very good measurement. The other thing that might happen is if that is in the venous side and there's not a lot of flow, what might happen to that blood? It starts to coagulate. So I'm going to want to fill that tube with liquid. And I'll use saline. And I'll put a little heparin in it. And so now what I do is I have a column of liquid. It goes into the vein, and so there's blood next to that column. This is the catheter tube. Put the column in there, and then whatever change happens at the tip of this is going to be reflected pretty well at the transducer. So we need to look at that. We need to look at that catheter.
Okay, now,
here's what we have here. In this corner, we're seeing what happens. Here's the dog's neck. Here's the catheter. And you're going to see that there are marks on the catheter, and the marks are every 10 centimeters. So you can see how far you're in. And so we're measuring three things here. We're measuring the respiration, this with a different set of transducer, a different mechanism. We're measuring, I don't remember, we'll see. This is the pressure we're measuring, and this is the EKG, and this is time. And what you hear, did you hear that? So this is the pressure that we're measuring at the tip of this catheter. Depends where the catheter is.
I know.
Right now, it's in the right atrium. Okay? Okay. Wee-wee-wee-wee is an audio cardioid. It's connected to the EKG, and so every time you hear that louder tone, that's a heartbeat. So these are the heartbeats, there's a heart rate. And now we're in the right atrium. Okay? Is it the kind of pressure you expect to see? This is zero, I think this is about 20 millimeters per. Bottom line is his respiration. What happens is they're measuring the impedance of the chest. You've seen these guys? See these guys running? They have a band around their chest. Well, if I put an electrode on either side of the chest, and I pass the current, and I measure the amount of current that can go through there, then basically the air is not a conductor, is it? So as the volume of air between the electrodes changes, the amount of voltage between the two is going to change, and I can see that as a reflection of inspiration and expiration. So this is inspiration and expiration. We're not really going to do that. So you notice it's going up the balloon. Okay, now the balloon's blown up, and now it's pushing it in a little bit. Where is it now? It's in the ventricle. And how do you know it's in the ventricle?
Pressure
increases quite a bit, and decreases quite a bit. Comes back to about the same level. Okay? And as I continue to push that in, what am I going to see that trace do? Let's say that it goes past the AV valve into the pulmonary artery. What is that trace going to look like? Is it keep looking like that, or is it going to change?
It's going to be higher up. It's not
going to
go down to zero.
It says it's going to be higher up, but it's not going to come down to zero. Everybody agree?
Yes.
Why won't it come to zero?
Pressure is not zero.
Because no, it's not creating pressure gradients because it's going to the lung. But why am I not seeing the pressure fall back to zero? Because it has, not because it has a balloon. The balloon is small compared to the artery.
The valve closes.
Because the valve closes. Okay? So let's see that. So now what is he doing? That's what he's doing. What is he doing? Is he pushing in?
Pulling back.
So where do you think the catheter is here? In the pulmonary artery, because the pressure went up and it doesn't go all the way down because the valve closed. What happens right here? Where is it now?
That's right back there.
Where is it now?
It's in the atrium.
Does that make sense to you, the form of that?
I'm a little confused.
Yeah, I'm a little confused.
What we did the first time is we pushed it in. And we started in the atrium. We started here. And the pressure was very low, and it always stayed very low. And we saw a little bit of a blip when there was an atrial contraction. And then we move into the ventricle. And when we moved into the ventricle, the ventricle contracted and relaxed, contracted and relaxed. And what you saw was the pressure in the ventricle, as you remember, became lower than the pressure in the atrium, and the valve opened. And then as we continued to push in, we got to that pulmonary valve. And so the tip of the catheter went into the pulmonary artery. And if you were standing in the analogous structure of what we did before, is somebody was standing in the aorta, right? And they didn't see the pressure go up until the valve opened. And when the valve closed, the pressure decreased until the valve opened again. But then it doesn't decrease all the way to zero, because it still has volume in there and has pressure. Does that make sense? Everybody okay with that? So let's look at these pressures and see what they were. And so now you see, here's a pressure scale. Here's a pressure scale, here's zero, and here's 40 millimeters of mercury, so that's about 10, 20, 30, 40. And you see the peak pressure is about 30 millimeters of mercury. What's a normal arterial blood pressure? Ballpark. Pardon? Arterial? In the aorta? What kind of numbers do you think about? 100 or more? So, gee, it's three times what it is here, isn't it? Dog and the human are the same. The mouse and the elephant. Dog, the human, the cat, and the rabbit are all about the same. Which is really interesting because you got this little one. Same one, man. Alright. So the thing that you notice is that the pressure in this system is quite low. You already knew that because you looked at the right ventricle and you said, gee, there's not a lot of muscle here. How do you think the resistance in the lung compares to the resistance in the systemic circulation? Much lower. How does the cardiac output of the right heart compare the cardiac output of the left arm? What's cardiac output? Cardiac output is milliliters or liters of volume of blood pumped by that heart in an hour. It's the same.
Yeah.
What would happen if it wasn't the same?
You can build up somewhere.
Well, back up someplace. What is it that keeps it kind of the same? Because from moment to moment it may not be the same. Well, what happens if, let's say the output of the right ventricle is a little bit greater than the output of the left ventricle for one beat? What happens to the output from the left ventricle for one beat? Why is it increasing?
Pressure.
Does what? Is a larger blood volume that comes in the ventricle, so what?
So when it contracts, it's more to be pushed out.
Okay. She said, so when it contracts, there's more to be pushed out. Is that why we're moving up?
Isn't it there's more volume there, it's greater pressure?
Well, but that pressure due to the stretching of the ventricle a little bit isn't really very high. The past pressure isn't very high. Why? Because what? There's a little bit more recoil, but that's not what's causing it. So let's review here. Let's review what Chad said. Because this is very insightful. what Chad said was, if the left ventricle pumps out a little more than the right, the right ventricle pumps out a little more than the left ventricle, then on the next beat, there's going to be more filling of the left ventricle before it contracts. And Kelly said, so it's going to pump out more. My question is, why? Not why in the sense of why does it do that, but how does it do that? What's the explanation for the increased pump?
Pressure is higher.
Where is higher? In the ventricle? When? During contraction. If the pressure in the ventricle during contraction is higher, how did it get that way? No, there isn't very much increased pressure. Oh, but we're talking about 1D. We said the flow from the right ventricle to the left ventricle in 1B increases. Chad told us that for that beat on the left ventricle, there's going to be more flow coming in. And the volume is going to be bigger. And Kelly said it's going to... Kelly said that there's going to be more volume pumped out. Okay? And Kate said there's going to be more pressure there. And Fatima said there's going to be more pressure during contraction. My question was, why will there be more pressure during contraction? Chelsea?
Is it because there's a bigger difference between the pressure and the...
No, not necessarily. That's not... The real question is, under these conditions, if Fatima is right, and there's a stronger contraction, why is the contraction stronger? So where are you going to stand to answer that question? You're not going to stand the ventricle. The ventricle isn't contracting. What's contracting? If you're standing in the ventricle, you see, then you're standing in this cavity. What's contracting? The muscle. Where are you going to stand? In the muscle. All right. So now you're standing in the muscle, and the volume in the cavity has gotten a little bit bigger. How do you see that reflected in the muscle? Pardon? Stretch the recoil force. Is it the recoil force that makes it? So let's not listen to what Rhea said. Let's watch what she said, and then we can put the words back on. She said, everybody see that? Maybe you can't see that. She said,
stop looking around so much.
You wouldn't have any
contraction. Wow.
And what she said was, this is really neat, she said was, wait a minute, isn't this cardiac muscle normally operating below the optimal length? And then she put her hands together and she said, and so when the volume in the ventricle gets a little bigger before contraction, doesn't that make the alignment of the actinomyosin better? And so won't I then have a stronger contraction? Yes. The answer is yes. Exactly what happens. At the end of that contraction, or at the end of that filling, the fibers, the actin and myosin, are in better alignment. And as a result of that, when we put calcium in there, they're going to contract. The contraction is going to be a more force-building contraction, the pressure in the ventricle is going to increase. And what's going to happen then? What's going to happen then? To pump this out, what's going to happen? The contraction, and we said it was contracting, it's developing force, stronger contraction of the what? The valve opens, and when does the valve open now compared to the previous beat?
Faster.
Okay? If it opens faster, how much of that contraction time is available for ejection?
More.
Well, if the force of contraction is stronger, both valves are closed, okay? And so you're pushing with those walls against this incompressible fluid, and the pressure is going to build faster. If the pressure builds faster, the valve is going to open sooner. What determines the time of contraction? The pressure in the ventricle. Not the rate. What determines
the volume?
The time of contraction.
How long
it contracts?
I don't know.
Okay.
Both indicated.
No. Who's standing in there? Who's standing in a muscle? And what did you see? You saw calcium coming in. And what did the active ions do when the calcium came in? Started interacting. And when did they stop? When the calcium left. And when did the calcium leave? When the action potential was over.
I have a question, and I need to go all the way back.
All the way back.
But I'm getting confused because I thought if there was too much volume in there, then wouldn't it stretch it beyond this place where it would have a good control?
And what's the key word that you had in that sentence?
Too much.
Remember, what Rhea said was, the first thing she said was, oh, isn't the normal operating range of the cardiac muscle less than the optimal length?
So
you only have one much. You don't have too much. If you have too much, you're right. That'll happen.
If
we say that that's the optimal length, that's the optimal alignment of active myosin, we said that a skeletal muscle, that's the length that the muscle is before contraction because it's attached. Okay? But in cardiac muscle, it's not attached. And so, it's not optimal. There's some overlap. So when we increase that volume, that end diastolic volume, what we see is that the length becomes more optimal.
Can you do that over here one more time? Using the pointer?
Now the more optimal.
If this is a skeletal muscle on here and this is a bone, it's attached to the bone. But Tom showed you this really neat picture that he got off of that mysterious source. The other section. The heart is muscle that's arranged like that. And so there are no bones, there's nothing stiff, there's nothing that it's attached to. And so if you ask me why does it work, why did it get to be that way, I can't answer that. But if you can tell me what is the reason for increasing the strength, I can say that there's more optimal alignment. What's the advantage of the heart acting normally at less than optimal length? Oh, it ensures that the heart pumps whatever comes to it. and ensures that over time, the right side and the left side are putting out the same amount.
So we were talking about exercise.
Well, we don't want to talk about exercise. Very tired. No, we'll talk about it. We'll do that. Okay. So let's look at the other side. So now let's look at the left side. And now what we've done in this one, we've floated that, we've pushed that catheter up so that it's in the left atrium.
What else?
And we're going to pull it back. Yep.
Real quick, before we move to the other side, when would be an example where that would occur?
When would be an example when what would occur?
Well, the scenario we just talked about.
The scenario we just talked about?
Yeah, with the right ventricle.
On a moment-to-moment basis.
So it's not, that's not the pathology?
That's not a pathology, that's normal operation. And we'll see an example of that next week when we want to start talking about blood pressure regulation, how that might happen. Okay?
Walking upstairs.
Okay, so let's see.
Okay, so where are we looking now? Well, this pressure, here's the arterial pressure, here's the pressure in the catheter, not really arterial pressure, that's the pressure in the catheter, and here it's high. Where are we? In the artery, where are we here? In the ventricle. How come there were all those strange beats in here? What do you think happened?
It's
not an intercom. What have we done? We didn't see this in the other side that much. What have we done? We stuck this flexible tube in. And we've gone through the valve. We're in here, we've gone through the valve. And what's happening in there?
It's trying to turn around.
Well, I don't know if it's trying to turn around, but what's happening? So put yourself in that right ventricle, okay? And that right ventricle, Amy can tell us all about this. In that right ventricle, she felt a little bit of pressure. What's different between that and the left ventricle? A lot of pressure. What's different between the flow on the left ventricle and the flow on the right ventricle? What's the difference in the pressure? It's really a high amount of pressure. So what do you think is going on with that catheter tip in that container? It's whipping around. And when it's whipping around, what might it hit? Might hit the wall. And if it happens to hit the wall, what might happen to a cardiac muscle cell there? It might depolarize. It might cause opening of channels, have an action potential, and we get a beat that's not coordinated. It's not coordinated with depolarization of the EKG, with the sinus rhythm. So now let's see if we've found enough. Let's get the rest of this.
So it contracts more. It contracts again.
Okay. We're up for weird questions right now. It's a good thing because earlier we weren't ready for weird questions. Go ahead.
I guess this means that we can manually stimulate cardiac contraction.
You can.
So, is that something to do with being in a room where there's a lot of bass and
I don't think that you have enough compression there. Under what conditions do you think
that you're familiar with, under what conditions do you think you might be able to do that?
CPR.
One of the things in CPR is that you're trying to affect blood flow through the heart to the coronary artery because by you're doing the action. But in fact, by doing that in a rhythmic way, you may actually stimulate some stimulation to people. So, so here we are. Where's the catheter here? Atrium. Why is it in the atrium? Because the pressure is very low. You'll notice it's a little bit higher than it was, a little bit higher than it was in the right atrium. Does that make sense to you? Higher than the right atrium? Because it's farther down the street, the pressure flow from the right ventricle to the atrium. And then where are we here? The ventricle, because it goes way high and back to something very low. Here we have some ectopic beats. Where are we now here? Does that make sense to you? Does trace make sense to you?
Yes.
And if I stretch this scale out so that paper is moving very, very fast, then right here I see the bottom trace in our composite diagram. Here I see the ventricular trace in our composite diagram. And here I see the arterial trace in our composite diagram. Questions? Charles. Fatima says,
I have a problem with that because I'm not wide enough to be able to do that.
No. Okay. Where's they going? In anatomy, you say plans. But in physiology, who wants to say it?
Thomas,
not your birthday?
No, not for a while.
Not for a while?
Are you
been 20 minutes? Not 10 days. Oh, okay. Well, put it on the calendar.
Ask the permission.
Take responsibility for your own reporting. Don't get him in trouble.
That was a team effort in this corner, and I wasn't the only one involved.
Oh, okay. Other questions? Did you? Thank you.